Mini-episode 959 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 959. This is a very special mini episode. FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with you. And I have with me two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, a couple fellows that we break down a number of subjects with. But today, it's to break down Super Bowl 52. And to one of these gentlemen in particular, very close to his heart, our good friend Joe Stazak from 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia. Good friend of the show, a longtime radio and TV guy in Philadelphia. And Joe, good to have you in. We're actually recording this parade day. I had no idea when I locked you in for today that it was going to be parade day. I thought for some reason it was going to be Wednesday of this week, but a pleasure to have you on, and congratulations about your Eagles, my friend.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. The town is beside himself, and it was going to be yesterday, but we had an ice storm, and it was really bad weather, so they decided to move it to Thursday. Perfect, but it was a little cold, and it was a circus-like atmosphere. Everyone behaved pretty much, and but I mean, it was packed. There was people, miles long, and this will never happen again in terms of it's the first one. So it's an unbelievable story. It's an unbelievable finish. And, this town, it's like Christmas season. Everyone's nice to each other, and, there's a lot of goodwill going around. I don't know how long it's going to last, but that's how it is right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and everything I've been seeing the last couple of days, very reminiscent to me. For us in Cleveland, it was just having a team breakthrough. We didn't have the number one team in this city breakthrough, the Browns, number one in fans' hearts. They're further away from that than ever. But just having the Cavs do it in 2016 was monumental. And from everything I've seen the last couple days, and you talk about a snow and ice storm, we got blasted pretty bad the night of the Super Bowl. I'm driving back from my Super Bowl party. It was a white knuckler, but I had sitting there next to me my phone, and via the TuneIn app, of course I had on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia, listening to you and your co-host on the post-game show. And
it was great
to hear the joy in your voice, my friend, and to hear you guys talking about it. And it brought me back to 2016, having my own memories of it. And again, just I can now identify with these moments of joy, and was very happy that you had it. And you speak of co-hosts here. Your regular co-host on your podcast, Callous Remarks, another great FDH Lounge dignitary, longtime friend of the show, my friend Steve Callous, coming on. And Steve, great to have you on as well. And I know you joined me in being very, very happy for Joe.
Oh, yeah, great to be with both of you guys. But I got to tell you, Rick, I was into the Eagles from very early on, once they got LeGarrette Blount, my favorite running back, even though he left my son's favorite team, the Patriots. I was all in pretty much from the get-go and thought, that he would play a big part, certainly bigger than he did. But then come Super Bowl time, guess what happened? LeGarrette Blount probably had the two biggest runs in that game, the 36-yarder in the first quarter, the 21-yard TD in early in the second quarter, and I think that's what led to Nick Foles, really having a lot of success with that pass run option that they were running. But I thought those two runs early in the game, I thought they were going to stack the box and try and stop those guys, and it just didn't work for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to start this round of questions here with Joe and set this up. And Joe, I know that, again, between your post-game show on Sunday night and going on TV subsequently, your old stomping grounds there at 29, going on there to talk Super Bowl and kind of making the rounds, I know that you've done a lot of breaking down of all of this in your mind. I'm going to go back to last week's show that we recorded for the Super Bowl preview. A couple of our guests, Phil Villapiano, Chidi Ahanotu, a couple guys who had been in the Super Bowl themselves, and both of them agreed with my three keys to the game. They had a couple of their own, but my three keys going in, and Steve started to kind of tease it there a little bit. One was the power running and the fact that Philly has power backs, New England basically doesn't. You would not characterize Lewis or White as that. Time of possession was really kind of skewed during the season for Philadelphia. They were up about, 32-30, I think, average per game. So my thought was, pound with the backs, establish time of possession. My second one was Foles has got to be the Minnesota Foles, not the Atlanta Foles. No dink and dunk crap. Aggressive, but effective. And that's the reason Philadelphia was the underdog. Who thought he could do that twice in a row? But that's what you needed. The third key was the key everybody else was identifying, four-man pass rush to be effective against New England because that's what works against Brady. Who would have ever thought you only get two out of the three Philadelphia wins and the four-man pass rush is not one of them? I'm looking at this like we've had an entire postseason of anomalies here. The biggest one, I think, prior to that game had been Jacksonville-Pittsburgh, where I picked New England in the AFC Championship game because I said the key to Jacksonville winning this game is for their defense to play far better than they did against Pittsburgh. And who sees that happening? I mean, Pittsburgh couldn't beat Jacksonville on a day when they were able to put up a lot of points on them, and Jacksonville won it with Blake Bortles rather than their defense. And I thought that was the biggest anomaly. But you look at this Super Bowl, the most yards in NFL history, not Super Bowl history, but NFL history. I mean, in a postseason of anomalies, this thing fits like a glove, doesn't it? And it's a thing where for Philadelphia to win the Super Bowl, I feel like it's the same thing as what I said about the Cavs being down 3-1, and that it's sort of like the Red Sox winning the World Series when they were down 0-3 to the Yankees. Like, it's got to be something that's just not ho-hum. It's got to be something like out of a great novel. And number one, to win it behind Nick Foles, and number two, to win it in the way that that game went, just seems fitting, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it was a story about the Hollywood script. It's unbelievable. I mean, Nick Foles, you know, he didn't lose a game since Carson Wentz got hurt. You know, he helped engineer when he came into the Rams game. Two drives ended up in two field goals, which, you know, won the game, basically. And he came back from, I think it was 18 down against the Giants, and we didn't whoop early on, and won that game. Had four touchdown passes, no interception. Struggled in the Raiders game, but still at the end, put it together a drive, resulted in a game-winning field goal. It's not this game. He was actually all right. He completed 76% of his passes, 240. He didn't have a touchdown, didn't have an interception. And he's been unbelievable in these playoffs, six touchdowns, one interception. He protects the football really well. So like you mentioned, Rick, I mean, he was off the charts against the Vikings. Some of those throws he made, there's teardrops, especially the one to Torrey Smith on the flea flicker.
Yep.
You're just so impressive. His rating was 141, and this is a perfect. Some people thought he needed to manage the game in the Super Bowl. I thought he needed to play more like he did against the Vikings. And his numbers weren't, his completion percentage wasn't as high, but I thought he played an absolute fair game because the other game against Case Keenum, the defense was strong and it was a big lead. Here he had to outswing Tom Brady, and, you know, that was a tough thing to do, especially because Brady put up 505 yards, you know, ridiculous numbers. But, you know, Foles caught a touchdown pass, threw for three more, one interception. It wasn't his fault, really. You know, Alshon Jeffery kind of tipped it back to the defensive back. I always thought, and I still seen in the both for one, plus one, you know, one takeaway each. The key is always the Brandon Graham strip sack at the end.
Yep.
They basically hadn't made a playoff all night. For a lot of different reasons. I also thought time of possession and Nick Foles kind of went together because the Eagles were middle of the pack in stops. I don't think the pass rush is as good as others think. I knew they weren't going to blitz a lot, so I thought the best way to keep Brady off the field was time of possession, you know, long drives, keep things rolling. You know, and they did, 34 to 26, basically, in 26 minutes, so Brady put up 505 yards, so that's going to go well for my theory. And then Red Zone Assistance, I didn't think could win this game by kicking field goals. And apparently Doug Peterson didn't either. He went for a tricky call, going up for it on fourth and one and a half with that Philly special, which Nick Foles called, actually. Doug Peterson got credit for it until they found out it was Nick Foles' idea. And, they were two for two on their fourth down in the fourth quarter. And all told, I always think third down conversions are huge. Third down conversions plus fourth down conversions, they were 12 of 18. They did a lot of things right, except for the defense being basically horrible. They made one play at the end. It was huge. It basically sealed the game. But Nick Foles had to outsling Tom Brady to make up for his defense, which was not good.
It was really amazing how it went. And I know, Steve, you must have been very bemused watching it. You're a guy who breaks things down pretty scientifically. You and I, a lot of times, will just look at the probabilities of how something's supposed to play out. And again, I could go on and on about this postseason. You look at that Falcons-Rams game. I think the first day set the tone for this. The Chiefs with the collapse against the Titans, where the Titans somehow make it to the second round of the playoffs with their thoroughly mediocre team, and it's clear that the front office believed they were mediocre, which is why they made a change at head coach. But the Falcons beating the Rams in a game where you just scratched your head, like, where did that come from in terms of the Falcons rising up and the Rams falling apart? That really kind of set the tone. I think we went wire to wire with weirdness in this postseason and games where if you played them 100 times, maybe you get that style of a game 5 times out of 100. And the Super Bowl, I thought, Steve, fit that perfectly.
Well, I certainly thought, as many did, that we were going to look at, that the Eagles had to plug in the Giants, Patriots, two Super Bowl tapes. And I thought we were going to get something like a Giants, Patriots, Super Bowl defense-dominated special. Instead, what we got is essentially what the Giants and Eagles played in 2017 twice, where Eli Manning somehow torched them for over 400 yards while he's playing on a three-win team. But somehow the Eagles came back to win the day, to win the game, one on a 61-yard field goal. When who knew who Jake Elliott even was? But it was really amazing. It was the difference between what I thought it was going to be, the old-time Super Bowl's defensive struggles, to what it was this year with the Giants and Eagles shootouts. And that's exactly what it was, including the ending, where, of course, the Nick Foles did lead them down the field on that long drive. You have to give him all the credit in the world for that. And then, yeah, it's true, the defense only made one play, but they made one play. That's all they needed to actually win the game. So all credit to the Eagles. I do want to give some credit to Chip Kelly, who, watching it and remembering Nick Foles from that 27 touchdown pass, 2-interception season in 2013, where they ran a lot of essentially run-pass option, I think it dawned on this coaching staff in the second half of the Atlanta game. Joe's right, and you're right too, Rick, in the first half. Nick Foles was not very good, but it was a very windy day, and it must have dawned on somebody at halftime, why don't we go to the run-pass option, throw 7-yard slants, and he did that brilliantly in the second half. And then I think the problem for Minnesota was they thought that's all he could do, and instead of doing that, he threw the ball down the field, and they had a lot of long completions that nobody in Minnesota was expecting, and they were able to continue that in the Super Bowl. My own personal opinion, I'm writing an article that has like 2 pages about how Bill Belichick might have lost the Super Bowl before it started by benching Malcolm Butler, but without Malcolm Butler to be that second corner after Gilmore, Foles had a field day, and he might have had a field day if Butler played. We'll never know. But certainly if you're going after, Eric Rowe, who the Eagles know well and picked on him early with Jeffrey, and then guys like Bademosi and Roberts, guys you don't even see playing on the Patriots that much, it really became, I thought, if it was really a football decision, I thought that was the biggest mistake that the Patriots made.
I would certainly agree with that, and we'll see what Butler does from here on in, but if there's no second act to his career, if he doesn't do a whole lot from here, then it's one of the most fascinating careers in league history, and that I don't think there's ever been a player who's been bookended in the public mind Super Bowl to Super Bowl. It's that play that he made against the Seahawks that put him on the map. He becomes a Pro Bowl player. He gets benched in this Super Bowl. We'll see if there's a second act to his career, but what we've seen thus far has been pretty fascinating. And again, Bademosi, all I got to say about that as a lifelong denizen of the North Coast, a Browns cast-off is who you had in there in key situations. You know, I saw plenty of that kind of crap when he was here. I could have told Bill Belichick about that, but he doesn't want to listen. But for the next round of questions, I want to start with Joe again here, being the Philly guy and having that perspective. And we've sort of touched on this a little bit lightly to this point, but I wonder to what degree, because you touched on it a little bit there, Joe, in terms of how aggressive they were going to be. And I agreed with you that they had to be aggressive in there. And look, if Nick Foles makes mistakes and that loses you the game, so be it. You're playing with house money. I almost wonder, in a weird kind of a way, if having Foles in there helped Peterson and the offensive coaching staff to do the right thing. I go back a year ago with Atlanta, and again, coming out of the NFC as the number one seed, but looking very, very formidable, and looking across the field at New England, and I feel like they kind of looked at them like they're a great team, we're a great team. And it was one of those things where you don't play with house money when that's the case. And Philadelphia, because Foles was in there, they had no choice but to be aggressive. Yes, you could say they learned the lessons from Atlanta a year ago, but in terms of putting their foot on the pedal and saying, we got to play like it's with house money, and yes, it's an NFL championship drought going back to 1960, and we've never won a Super Bowl, but this is still how we have to approach it. My guess is Doug Peterson has proved that he's smart enough that he would have taken the same approach if it was Carson Wentz, but I guess we'll never know for sure. Do you think in any weird kind of a way, Joe, it actually helped that they had Foles because it forced them to do the right thing game plan wise?
I'm not so sure. Peterson always talks about that's like next man up, and I never thought they would change anything when Carson Wentz went down. Maybe initially to get Nick Foles' kind of feet wet and get him going a little bit. He didn't have a training camp, and he didn't play all that much this year, except maybe in victory formation. But, Wentz couldn't have listened to the rules, and Foles was a very, Peterson trusted Foles. You know, if you look at his career playoff games, he's thrown one interception, and I believe he has eight touchdowns and one interception. He protects the football. I've never seen him play that good, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know if anyone's seen him play that well, except for the seven touchdowns maybe against the Raiders. He's kind of an anomaly himself. He's known as an above-average quarterback for the most part, but he has like these ridiculous records of the seven-touchdown game, he was MVP of a Pro Bowl, now he's an MVP of a Super Bowl, and a 27-2 year. So at some point, he's got to get some credit for, you know, the way he can play. But now I think Doug Peterson is going to be aggressive, and sometimes it bites him in the rear end, sometimes it doesn't, but he's consistent. And I talked to Steve about this the other day. Once they missed the early extra points, they were just points. I don't think I would have gone for two. I would have taken the easy point.
Yes.
But, you know, early in the game, I would have just taken the point. But he did that, and it didn't work. But then it did work on the fourth and one, where he put up a field goal to the game. Like I said, and Susan said after the game, you can't win the field goals against this team. And like you said, Rick, you gotta keep your foot on the pedal. And, I thought they did. And Nick Foles is brilliant. I think the fact that Peterson put him in a good position, I thought Peterson's game plan against the Vikings and the Patriots was excellent. And Nick Foles executed it. You know, I thought they played their best game. And they saved the best for last. The receivers fought everything.
Yep.
They have a cadence. They're known to have the zips once in a while. They caught everything in this game. And the running backs, like Steve said, the Garrett Blunt was awesome. He had a couple of big plays, including that 21-yard touchdown run, a 36-yard play. They had to play that way. Brady had 9 plays of over 20 yards. That broke Kaepernick's record a couple years ago. He had 7. Brady had 9 plays over 20 yards, and some of them were well over 20 yards.
Right.
Emmitt Bola, 50 yards. Burkhead, 46 yards. Hogan, 43 yards. I mean, he had his winners. The tackling wasn't all that great. But both sides. Both sides looked like sieves. But again, Nick, I give him all the credit in the world. Nick Foles was stunned. He won 3 playoffs. He only played 1. And I don't think Carson Wentz stepped up there. I don't know if he could have even played as well as that. But Nick Foles was brilliant. I think Doug Peterson put him in a very good position to be successful.
Exactly. And as I think you clarified there, we have to stipulate, offensively, they could not have played better. On one side of the ball, anyways. One side showed up, not the side we expected necessarily. All right, to bring this full circle, Steve, I'll put the question to you. Do you think, in an odd kind of a way, having Foles in there was beneficial rather than Wentz, just because it forced them to be as aggressive as they needed to be and not go into a shell like so many teams do against New England?
Well, I do partially because, and John and I have talked about this all year with the Eagles, had the Eagles gotten down 14-3, 14-7, 17-7, whatever, we both think he would have just pushed the panic button and had Foles throwing 50 times. But the beauty of this game for the Eagles is, frankly, that the Patriots have never scored in the first quarter of a Super Bowl, and even in this game they scored a field goal, so they now have 3 points in their 8 Brady Belichick Super Bowls in the first quarter.
Wow.
So they never really had a chance to get behind. They did, I thought, commit to the run more than they usually do, but they would always... Look at that Kansas City game early in the year. They always went away from it as soon as they got behind. And I know Joe calls Peterson sometimes Andy Reid 2.0 because that's what Andy Reid did forever, and that's who Peterson worked under for a few years. But I think those kinds of things broke well for them. So I think they were comfortable being aggressive with Foles in what Foles was doing. In other words, if you remember the first pass of the Atlanta game, he tried to throw the ball 40 yards downfield. It was a terrible win. It came up 10 yards short, and Chris Collinsworth was like mocking him. Or I think it was Collinsworth. It might have been somebody else. I don't even remember. But then Ryan threw the same pass, and it was 5 yards short, so then it dawned on everybody the win was a factor. But once they committed to the run-pass option, they could be aggressive within that scheme. And in this Super Bowl, with the Eagles rushing for 164 yards, I think that was the commitment, and that's what also got them the time of possession differential that you guys were talking about. So, yes, I think to some degree, yes, but again, he was very aggressive with Nick Foles within
right.
what Nick Foles could do, coupled with an excellent running game.
I would agree with that as well, but again, an outcome that I will say made me very happy. I loathe all Boston teams, the Patriots particularly among them. But, Joe, I was very happy for you. We speak a lot of times of the similarities between our cities sporting-wise.
Yeah.
So, again, congratulations. I can, as a Browns fan, I can only dream what this is going to be like. But, I got a ways to go. But, Joe, once again, congratulations, and thank you so much for being here to give us your insights.
Hey, Rick, I appreciate it a lot. You know, it's been 51 years for me, and I remember how despondent I was after the 81 Super Bowl, and I wasn't thrilled after the 2005 Super Bowl either. So it's, it erased, and I did a whole show on this the other day, it erased a lot of ghosts from playoffs past, and even the other sports, like Joe Parker and, Black Friday in 78, Phil's Dodgers, Donovan's three picks. Against Carolina and the Patriots, just kind of erased all that. And, the town is thrilled. And like I said, it's like Christmas season all over again. Everyone's happy and actually nice to each other around here.
Oh, yeah. And I tell you what, I can't wait for season 13 of Sunny, specifically the episode The Gang Goes to the Super Bowl Parade. I'm looking forward to that one. And I will tell you, Steve, a pleasure to have you on as well. Great to get your insights. Your insights are always sharp on any of these matters here. Thank you so much for being a part of this as well.
Yeah, great to be with both of you guys. It's really a lot of fun to do a show with both of you.
Oh, yeah, especially for something like this, a game we'll never forget. And, again,
can I just say one thing?
Go ahead, buddy.
Props to Steve. I mean, he's a New York guy most of the time, and I know he knows a lot about the Patriots, but he's been with me the whole way and really, really, became an expert with the Eagles. And just he was on the ride the whole time, and he knew them inside out, break it down. And I was very impressed, Steve, with how you handled the Eagles this year. And it was a great run. It was an exciting team. All the way to the Super Bowl. Neither of us thought that would happen, but, kudos to you, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that, but again, I throw it right back to you. It was a lot of fun doing that, and as you both know, the Giants season was over after week 3 when they were 0-3, so it was easy to jump on the bandwagon early. And I will say, Rick, that both Joe and I, on the air in Philly and on our podcast, not only picked the Eagles with the points in all three playoff games, but picked the Eagles to win all three playoff games. And I think if you watch them all year, you kind of saw the snowball getting bigger and bigger. And then even with the Wentz injury, once they corrected it in the Atlanta game in the second half,
right?
I thought they had an excellent chance to win, and to their credit, they did.
Well, yeah.
And Rick Steve's 7-0 since the divisional round, and picking games and picking winners and picking with the point. 7-0. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Rick, we'll be doing this from Vegas next year.
Well, I got my rear end handed to me in the playoffs. The playoffs were brutal this year, so props to you for that, Steve. And again, you know, doing regular radio hits in Philly about the Eagles when you're not even from there, I just take my hat off to you. Philly is a demanding sports city, and again, if Steve wasn't on point, people would have been right up his rear end. So props to that. That's a hard thing to do when you're not living in the market there. So that's amazing. Uh-oh. Take my hat off.
Well, I agree, but Joe made it easy for me. And as you know, of course, NFC East is NFC East, so I'm totally up with that.
Same division.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And look, they're a great team to root for. And again, I'm a blunt guy. I don't know why the Patriots let them go. And I just wrote an article that I sent to both of you guys. But the Eagles better not let him go, because they used that three-headed monster, and he was a huge part of it.
Well, and here's the thing. And I'll be perfectly honest in the end here as I wrap this up. That, again, by the time the Super Bowl came around, obviously I was on the Eagles bandwagon, but I talked before about my hatred of all things Chowd. I was rooting for who I thought would be the most effective firewall, which I thought first and foremost would be New Orleans. They were my Super Bowl pick going into the playoffs. I frankly thought Minnesota would be a little more effective as well. So it took me a while to reach the level of enthusiasm, but by the time you guys were the firewall between the Patriots and the Super Bowl, I was fully on board, Joe. So I'd be less than honest if I didn't admit that. But they proved me wrong, and thank God they did. What a story. And again, thanks so much to both of you for being a part of this great recap of Super Bowl 52 here in FDH Lounge mini episode number 959.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, The Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.